Chapter 7. 2 days later, Custer came swiftly out of the office. "Bob, your Blumenthal has just rung up. You're to go with the Cadillac at 11. He wants to make a trial run." I flung down the screwdriver and spanner. "Otto, if only we could do it." "What did I tell you?" came up from Lentz in the pit under the Ford. "I told you he'd come back. Always listen to Gottfried." "You hold your tongue. This situation is serious," I shouted down to him. "Otto, what's the outside I can drop the price?" "$2,000 at the outside. At the absolute outside, $2,200. Then if there's nothing for it, $2,500. If you see you're dealing with a complete maniac, $2,600. But tell him in that case, we will curse him to all eternity." "Good." We polished the car till it shone. I got in. Custer laid a hand on my shoulder. "Bob, remember your duty as a soldier. Defend the honor of the workshop with your blood if need be. Die standing, your hand on Blumenthal's wallet." "Right," I grinned. Lentz hauled a medallion from his pocket and held it before my face. "Hold the amulet, Bob." "All right." I took it. "Abracadabra, great Siva," prayed Gottfried. "Endue this poor mutt with strength and courage. Wait, here, better still, take it with you. There, now spit 3 times. "Done," said I, spat at his feet, and drove off, past Jupp, who saluted excitedly with a petrol pipe. En route, I bought some pinks and arranged them artistically in the cut-glass vases of the car, a speculation on Frau Blumenthal. Unfortunately, Blumenthal received me in his office, not at his house. I had to wait a quarter of an hour. "Dearest," I thought, "I know that trick. You won't wear me out that way." I pumped a pretty typist in the anteroom, to whom I gave the pink in my buttonhole, about the business. "Woolens. Turnover good. 9 in the office, 1 sleeping partner. Keenest rival, Meyer and son." Young Meyer drove a red 2-seater Essex. So far I got when Blumenthal called me. He shot at sight with both barrels. "Young man," said he, "I haven't much time. Last I saw, your price was mere wish fulfillment. Now, hand on heart, what does the car cost?" 7,000 marks, I replied. He turned away sharply. "Then there's nothing doing." "Here, Blumenthal," said I. "Just you look at the car once more." "Quite unnecessary," he interrupted. "I saw all I want to see last time." "There is seeing and seeing," I explained. "You should see the details. The lacquer, first class, from Fall and Ruhrbeck. Cost price, 250 marks. The springs, new catalog price, 600 marks. Makes 850 already. The upholstery, finest corduroy." He dismissed it. I started again. I invited him to inspect the luxurious fittings, the magnificent coach leather hood, the chromium radiator, the modern buffers, 60 marks the pair. Like a mother struggling to get back to her child, I tried to persuade Blumenthal to come down to the Cadillac. I knew, like Antaeus, that if I could once get in touch with the earth again, I should find new strength. Prices lose much of their abstract terror when one can show something for them. But Blumenthal also knew that his strength lay behind his writing desk. He removed his glasses and now went for me properly. We fought like tiger and python. Blumenthal was the python. Before I could turn round, he had already reduced me 1,500 marks. I began to get alarmed and nervous. I felt in my pocket and held Gottfried's amulet tight in my hand. "Herr Blumenthal," said I, pretty exhausted. "It is 1 o'clock. You will be wanting to go to lunch." At all costs, I wanted to get out of this office where prices melted like snow. "I don't lunch till 2, explained Blumenthal, unperturbed. "But I'll tell you what. We might make a trial run now. I breathed again. We drove to his house. To my surprise, once in the car, he was a changed man. Good-humoredly, he told me the joke about the Emperor Franz Josef, which I knew long ago. I told him the one about the tram driver. Then he told me the one about the Saxon who lost his way. I followed immediately with the one about the Scotch lovers. Not until we were outside his house did we become serious again. He asked me to wait while he fetched his wife. "Dear fat friend," said I to the Cadillac, patting the radiator. "There's sure some new devilry behind all that joking, but don't you worry. We'll find a home for you yet. He'll buy you, all right. When a Jew comes back, he buys. When a Christian comes back, he's still got a long way to go. He makes half a dozen trial runs to save himself taxi fares, and then it suddenly occurs to him he wants to buy a kitchen range instead. No, no, Jews are all right. They know what they want. But my good friend, if I come down another 100 marks to this direct descendant of the pugnacious Judas Maccabeus, may I never drink another schnapps in all my life." Frau Blumenthal appeared. I remembered a council of Lenses and changed from a warrior into a cavalier. Blumenthal greeted the change with a villainous grin. The man was of iron. He ought to have been selling locomotives, not woolens. I saw to it that he sat in the back and Frau Blumenthal beside me. "Where would you like me to drive you, madam?" I asked meltingly. "Anywhere you like," said she with a motherly smile. I began to talk. It was a pleasure to have a harmless human being to deal with. I spoke quietly so that Blumenthal could not catch much. I talked more easily so. It was bad enough to have him sitting behind me. We pulled up. I got out and looked at my enemy steadily. "You must admit, anyway, that the car runs like butter, Herr Blumenthal." "Why talk of butter, young man?" he countered with a curious friendliness. "When the tax eats it all. The car costs too much in tax. You told me as much." "Herr Blumenthal," said I in an effort to fix the tone, "you are a businessman. I can speak plainly to you. That isn't a tax. It's an investment. Tell me, what is it a business most wants today? You know very well. Not capital, as in the old days. It wants credit. And how does one get it? By putting a good face on it. A Cadillac now is solid and smart, comfortable, but not old-fashioned. Healthy middle class. It's a living advertisement for any business." Blumenthal turned with amusement to his wife. "He has a Jewish head, eh?" "Young man," said he then, still in a familiar tone, "the best advertisement for solidity today is a shabby suit and a bus ticket. If we two had the money that is still unpaid for all the smart cars there are flitting about, we could sit down and rest quietly. Take it from me, in confidence." I looked at him suspiciously. What was he up to now with his friendliness? Or had the presence of his wife damped his fighting spirit? I decided to fire a big gun. "A Cadillac like this is a very different proposition from an Essex, for example. Isn't it so, Frau Blumenthal? Young Meyer of Meyer and Son drives one, but I would not take as a gift any of these loud red sleighs." I heard Blumenthal snort and went on quickly. "Besides, the color here suits you so well, madam. Soft cobalt blue with blonde." I saw Blumenthal suddenly grinning like a cage full of monkeys. "Meyer and Son. Shrewd, shrewd." He groaned. "And now flattery, flattery." I glanced at him. I could not believe my eyes. It was right. At once I struck again in the same vein. "Herr Blumenthal, you stop me if I go wrong. To a woman, flattery is not flattery. It is a compliment. which unfortunately in these miserable days has become all too rare. A woman is not a piece of steel furniture. She is a flower. She does not ask for reality. She wants the warm, gay sun of flattery. It is better to say something pretty to her every day than to slave grimly for her all your life. Take it from me. Also in confidence. And anyway, what I said was not flattery, but plain scientific fact. Blue does go with blonde.
Well roared, lion, said Blumenthal, beaming. Look here, Herr Lohkump. I know I can easily knock you down another 1,000 marks. I stepped back a pace.
Wily devil, thought I. Now for the expected blow. I saw myself already wandering through life a total abstainer, and cast the look of a martyred young deer at Frau Blumenthal. But, father, said she.
Now, mother, he replied. What I say is, I could, but I won't. It has given me pleasure as a businessman, the way you have worked. A trifle too fanciful, perhaps, but all the same. That about Meyer and Son was very good. Is your mother Jewish?
No.
Have you ever been in ready-mades?
Yes.
You see, hence the style. In what branch?
Souls, I replied. I was meant for a schoolteacher.
Herr Lohkump, said Blumenthal. Respects. If you are ever out of a job, look me up.
He wrote out a check and gave it to me. I could hardly believe my eyes. Prepayment. A miracle.
Herr Blumenthal, said I, overcome. Allow me to include free with the car 2 cut-glass ashtrays and a 1st-class rubber mat.
Grand, he remarked. Even old Blumenthal gets something given him.
Then he invited me to supper the next evening. Frau Blumenthal smiled motherly approval.
There will be stuffed pike, said she gently.
A delicacy, said I.
Then I'll bring the car along. We'll put in the final touches first thing in the morning.
I flew back to the workshop like a swallow, but Lentz and Otto had gone out to lunch. I should have to moderate my triumph. Only Jupp was there.
Sold?
He asked.
You'd like to know that, wouldn't you? Said I. Here's $1. Go and build yourself an aeroplane.
It is sold, then, grinned Jupp.
I'm going out now to eat, said I, but woe betide you if you say anything to the others before I get back.
Herr Lohkump, he assured me, spinning the dollar in the air. I'm a grave.
You look like it, said I, and stepped on the gas.
As I entered the yard again, Jupp made me a sign.
What's the matter? I asked. Have you opened your trap?
Herr Lohkump, like iron, he grinned. Only the Ford bloke is inside.
I left the Cadillac in the yard and went into the workshop. The baker was there, just bending over a book of color samples. He had on a checked overcoat with a broad mourning band. Beside him was standing a pretty creature, with quick black eyes, an open cloak with rabbit fur trimmings, and patent leather shoes too small for her. They were entertaining themselves with the color of the varnish. The dark person was for brilliant cinnabar, but the baker had it against red, as he was still in mourning. He suggested a pale yellow-gray.
Ach, what? Pouted the dark one. A Ford has to be strikingly varnished, otherwise it looks like nothing at all.
She shot imploring glances at us, shrugged her shoulders when the baker resisted, grimaced, and winked at us.
A gay spark.
Finally, they compromised on mignonette green. The girl wanted a bright hood to go with it, but there the baker was firm. The morning must come out somewhere. He held out for a black leather hood. And incidentally, did a good stroke of business, in that not only was he getting the hood for nothing, but leather was dearer than fabric. The two left. But in the yard was yet another delay.
The Dark One no sooner spotted the Cadillac than she shot up to it.
Oh, look, Poopy, there is a car. Marvelous. That's the sort I like.
The next moment she had the door open and was sitting inside, beaming with pleasure.
These are seats, superb, like club armchairs. A different matter from the Ford.
Now, come along, said Poopy, ill-humoredly.
Lentz gave me a dig. I should go into action and try to unload the car on the baker. I looked at Gottfried condescendingly and said nothing. He prodded me harder. I prodded him in return and turned my back on him. With difficulty, the baker at last got his black jewel out of the car, and rather sulky and decidedly annoyed, made off. We watched the couple go.
A man of snap decisions, said I. Repaired car, new wife, hats off.
Well, said Custer, he'll have his joy of her yet.
They had barely turned the corner when Gottfried broke loose.
Are you quite godforsaken, Bob? Missing an opportunity like that? Why, that was a textbook example of when to hoe in.
Lentz, Corporal Lentz, I replied. Put your heels together when you speak to a superior officer. Do you think I'm a bigamist to marry off the car twice?
It was a great moment to see Gottfried then. His eyes were like plates.
Don't jest with holy things, he stammered.
I ignored him altogether and turned to Custer.
Say farewell, Otto, to our little Cadillac. She belongs to us no more. From now on, she will lend luster to the underpants trade. Let's hope she has a good life there. Not so heroic as with us, perhaps, but safer.
I pulled out the check. Lentz almost fell to pieces.
No. What? You mean paid?
He said in a hoarse whisper.
How much do you think, then, you beginners? I asked, waving the check to and fro.
Guess.
Four, shouted Lentz with closed eyes.
4-5, said Custer.
5,
shouted Yup from the pump.
5-5,
I crashed in.
Lentz tore the check from my hand.
Impossible. Then it won't be covered.
Here, Lentz, said I with dignity. That check is as sound as you are unsound. My friend Blumenthal is good for 20 times the amount. My friend, you understand with whom I shall be eating stuffed pike tomorrow night? Let that be an example. Cement a friendship, get paid in advance, and be invited to supper. That's what's called salesmanship. Now you can stand easy.
Gottfried gathered himself together with difficulty. He tried a last shot.
My advertisement. And the amulet.
I passed him over the medallion.
Here's your dog license. Forgot I had it.
You've sold like a past master, Bob, said Custer.
Thank God we're rid of the sleigh. We can damned well do with the cash.
Will you give me an advance of 50 marks? I asked.
100. You've earned it.
You wouldn't like an advance of my gray overcoat as well, I suppose, asked Gottfried with half-shut eyes.
Do you want to go into hospital, you miserable, indiscreet bastard? I retorted.
Well, boys, I think we close for today, proposed Custer. We've made enough for one day, and one should not tempt God. What about taking Carl out and training for the race?
Yup had long since abandoned the petrol pump. He was now wiping his hands excitedly.
I suppose I take command here again, then, Herr Custer, eh?
No, Yup, said Otto, laughing. You're coming, too.
We drove first to the bank and paid in the check. Lentz did not rest until he was sure it was in order. Then we set off, blowing sparks from the exhaust.